listening to Football in Europe, the weekly podcast covering the game across the continent.
Hello and welcome to Football in Europe for the final show of the European football season. I'm Rob Daly, with me Chris Parrott. Chris, hello.
Hello, I can't believe it's the final show of this season.
39th show of the season.
That's like the Premier League. Remember when they won in game 39?
Exactly. But
we are doing this from Indonesia. It's lovely.
And people don't want this either. And a big thanks to everyone who has downloaded and subscribed to the show this season, because we've had 100,000 downloads. Which isn't bad, Chris. Not a bad number.
100,000? It's
yes.
Amazing.
Some people have really stuck with us through thick and thin this season. So, Chris, lots to get through. We're going to do our European team of the season. Really hard, isn't it?
Really hard. There are a couple of positions which I really had to research. I couldn't think of some, and then other positions where there were loads.
We'll also read out your tweets, because people have been sending us their player of the season for many of Europe's top leagues. Chris, last week I was in Basel for the Europa League final.
Good night, it looked like.
During the day, there was so many Liverpool fans there, I think they reckoned it was about 20,000. And they estimate that had it been a Villarreal Sevilla final, they'd have had 4,000 empty seats.
Exactly.
Suddenly you have Liverpool and it goes the other way. But the city centre was amazing. That Liverpool just completely took over. People may have seen on my Twitter, I posted a video of the flares and the singing, everything in the middle of town. It was absolutely brilliant. And Sevilla deserved it. I mean, outstanding. What did you think to their second half performance? They just blew Liverpool away.
They did. I thought it proved two things. One, Unai Emery's team are very, very good. They kept on saying, particularly in some of the English broadcasters, oh, no real stars. But you think, well, actually, they have got stars. They've got a guy who scored 29 goals this season. I think he'd be considered a star if he was playing in the Premier League. And also that we knew it, Klopp knew it, that Liverpool are a long way from the finished article.
Yes, that was very evident.
They are on their way, absolutely. Mm. They made a European final, but you know, even, okay, you concede after 17 seconds, that's a blow, but you think someone needed to, I don't know whether to go round or, you know, a Gerard Terry figure and be like, it's still 1-1.
Yeah, they did just lose their nerve. Yeah. It really unsettled them in a way that, you know, they probably just had a big rallying team talk from Jurgen Klopp, and then you can see, like, it goes the other way. And then Sevilla, at the weekend, involved in the Copa del Rey final, beaten 2-0 by Barcelona. Jordi Alba and Neymar with the goals in extra time. There were actually three red cards in the game as well. Mascherano sent off in the first half for bringing down Kevin Gamero, who Chris was referring to there. But two red cards then for Sevilla later in the game. They ended up with nine men. So a domestic double for Barca in a week when they signed a new kit deal, Chris. Get this. So Nike are going to continue making their kits until 2018. They're getting £120 million a year, according to Mundo Deportivo.
£120 million.
That is a staggering number,
isn't it?
Just for your kit manufacturer.
Just for your kit. I mean, I imagine Nike are going to make a lot of money from Barcelona shirts. So it's like one of those perfect marriages, but that is a lot. Because we thought when Manchester United signed their last kit deal, that was big. Mm. But that...
Well, you were talking to me about the Chelsea one, where Chelsea pulled out their Adidas Adidas one.
You can see why, given how much... I can't remember the exact figure, but it's nowhere near 120 million. And I'm sure it's one of those things. Do you remember when petrol just... It went over a pound. This has relevance.
Yeah.
It went over a pound, and then next thing you're like, what is 170? When did that happen? It's like the same sort of things. They've gone over some line and now all of a sudden it's just...
It's huge money. Apparently this is the biggest deal of its kind for any sporting team. So staggering amounts of money. Chris, this week on the show, I want to play you... I like playing you things and then getting your reaction. So, you know, obviously we're on the brink of the European Championships in France. And so all the national teams are releasing official songs. Now, how do you feel about the official song for starters?
I'm not a huge fan.
No. Well, wait till you hear these little ditties.
No, I can imagine these.
Okay, so we'll start. Now, you are a huge Manic Street Preachers fan, right?
Yeah, which is why I was upset when I found out they were doing the Welsh song.
Well, wait till you hear it, son, because this is absolutely god-awful.
Not since 1958, when Brazil would make a heart break. But now that France has arrived, it feels so good to be alive. And let's not forget Gary Speed. He wore his heart upon his sleeve. And if he is looking down, then I'll...
Yeah, it is.
It's not great.
They've gone from motorcycle emptiness and a design to life.
To this. It's 1958 when they made our hearts break. It's like you just wouldn't make that song. It's like a session band.
Yeah, they've tried to do the three lines thing, put in the commentary, you know, from 96 and 98. But you see, I don't think you should try and make it a song.
I'll turn it off now. It's absolutely horrible.
I think you should just fill it with... It's never going to be a... People aren't going to sing along to it like that. They sung three lines on a shirt because it was more like a football chant.
Yeah.
And you could belt it out after 10 pints or whatever at Wembley Stadium. And, you know, that's the reason it took off. But, like, clever lyrics, they're not especially clever, but people aren't going to... I'm sorry. It needs to be more football chanty for me if it's going to be a song.
Okay, well, the Irish one's a bit more simple. This is called Irish Roar. So they've only... Well, first of all, what did you give the Welsh one out of five? How many thumbs up out of Chris Parrott's five thumbs?
I'd give him two.
Two, okay.
That's generous.
Okay, so what about this one? This, Irish Roar.
This is more like it. Three and a half.
You don't mind this? Oh, okay.
Because it's more, you know, it's more football fan. You can imagine listening to this before and being psyched up for the game. You can't imagine listening to the Manic song and being like, yeah, come on, Wales, we're going to do this.
Yeah. Okay, the final one. Now, this is an absolute sin against all art. This is the France
fan,
one.
Then.
This is the France one. I was made for loving you, my Tim. You were made for loving me. Out tonight, I want to give it all to you. In the darkness, there's so much I want to do. So this is a cover of the Kiss song. What was it? I was made for loving you, baby, and all that. And it's in English, which has got lots of French people very upset for starters.
Yeah, and that's a good point.
Yeah, the French, the Secretary of State for France said they're really unhappy that it's all in English. And it is therefore incomprehensible that the anthem of the French national team should be in English, said Mr. André Vallini.
I think he's got a point. It does seem a little strange.
And it's rubbish.
Yeah. Yeah, you can actually play the guitar and sing. What we should have done. Should have made our own.
We should have done that. So what's this one getting?
One, max.
Yeah, it's got to be one, max.
This is worse than the Manics.
Okay, so that's Wales, Ireland and France. God, you can really hear the Essex accent when you say Wales. Should we just put on three lines?
Yeah, because
this is the 98 version. Do you prefer this one?
I was driving back late on Saturday. You know, you need some music to perk you up sometimes. And I thought, I'll put on three lines. Got me home in a flash.
it got me so excited.
The 96 one and the 98 one. They did two. Amazing.
What's your favourite thing about the video?
We're going to win Euro.
What's your favourite thing about the video?
The second one in 98 when they all end up in a car park in France and they have a game against the Germans. And a certain player who in English had a rude surname.
Yes.
Stefan Kuntz. They are all the German, all the German fans
the
have that on the back of their shirts. Classic 90s humour, but it's great.
It's really simple. Speaking of England, Chris, you're around mine to watch... England against Turkey on Sunday. Thoughts? It was we had that front pairing of Vardy and Kane. There were some nice little moments.
You could see that Jamie Vardy is not a winger. He's not a left winger. But lo and behold, play him down the middle. I thought he looked really good. Kane looked excellent. Not sure about Kane taking all the free kicks and everything.
No, he was a bit off with that, wasn't he?
But no, good. And okay, he was offside, but Dele Alli's ball proved, I think, why he should be picking up the ball in that position and playing as the 10 because they have an understanding. And yeah, I mean, we were missing a few first choice players, and we beat a good Turkey team.
Yeah, they did. And we're going to get on to some of the cup final results from the weekend as well, because Spain, Italy, Germany, France all had their cup finals this week, much like the FA Cup final in England, which you commentated on. You were working for MUTV, Manchester United beating Crystal Palace. Quick thought on that one, Louis van Gaal's last game in charge as Manchester United manager as well, as it's, you know, we're recording this on Monday, it's breaking that Mourinho will replace him.
Pleased for him, actually, that he did win something at the end of his tenure. Lingard's goal was a beaut. It was a beaut.
Yeah.
Alan Pardew's jig was not.
Like some sort of curse over his own team.
Didn't enjoy that at all. didn't understand why Puncheon was left on the bench initially. Okay, he looks great if he comes on and scores the winner, which it looked like. But credit to United, in fairness. 10 minutes to go, they're losing the cup final. They win it. I do think whatever happens now, if it's Mourinho, it's going to be Mourinho. But that group of young players, and you know, the likes of, I think Rashford was six when they last won the FA Cup. Rashford, Martial, even people like Smalling, to win a trophy. I heard Rooney say it on Five Live on the way to the stadium, and he said it's really important that we win something, this group of players win something early in their career, so that's...
It's not a thing.
Yeah, it's not a thing. It's the acceptable level you have to get to, and you might look back on that FA Cup as being quite important for that group of players.
Absolutely. And Rooney's first FA Cup as well, which is
amazing.
Which is absolutely staggering. FA Cup, delight for Manchester United. Mourinho in the Premier League. Premier League will have the best group of managers in the world next season. It's an amazing cast list.
And the majority of whom minimum requirement will be top four, and someone simply won't be able to achieve that. It's going to be mad. Mourinho, Conte, Guardiola, Klopp.
Wenger, Pochettino.
Pretty amazing.
Missing there, isn't there? Yeah. But it's just an amazing list of managers. Yeah. And we were trying to pick out other world managers in that bracket. And you'd say Ancelotti, you'd say Simeone, and you'd say Allegri.
Yeah, and probably Luis Enrique.
But
Barca's a bit different. Barca is a bit different. But not many is the answer.
No. Chris, Russian Premier League finished at the weekend, and CSKA Moscow are champions. Poor old Russian Lester Rostov. They didn't win it.
They didn't, but CSKA probably the best team over the course of the season. Slutsky, nice, lovely little build-up to go to Euro having won the title. But Alan Zagoev, as of Monday, ruled out, it looks, of Euro. Broke his foot.
Russia number 10.
The former golden boy, it's now Alexander Golovin, his CSKA teammate. But, I mean, you commentated on the game, that's a big blow.
I didn't know he was injured. He scored the only goal of the game. CSKA, if they won, they were champions. It was simple. So they did win. They won at Rubin Kazan. Rostov won their game, but it wasn't enough. And he scored the only goal, Zhigoyev. Wonderful strike. Great ending to the game, because Rubin, their former manager is Kerban Berdiev, who's now in charge of Rostov. So they were trying to do him a big favour. And they had the goalkeeper up for the corner in the final moment. They were trying to get something. But they couldn't do it. CSKA held strong.
But I think it was something on Twitter. Akinfeev made an outrageous save, didn't he?
Oh, he made the save of the season, double save that I was just blown away by. It was really good. And he's Russia's number one. England will be coming up against him. He can have a wobbly moment, though, can't he? Akinfeev.
Yeah. He looks very, very good, and then he has a wobbly moment.
He'll have like a month of wobbles, and then he'll get himself sorted.
I just think, again, I know we've said it, but Berezutsky and Ignashevich are going to start for Russia.
Play Vardy. He'll kill them.
They're
not quick.
They are not quick. I mean, what are they, about 70, almost 80 between them? Yeah. I mean, just play Vardy.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's speak to Kevin Hatchard next, because it was the German Cup final at the weekend, Pep Guardiola's final game in charge of Bayern.
This is Football in Europe, Bundesliga Roundup.
Joining us now, Kevin Hatchard. Kevin, great to have you on for the final show of the season.
Delighted to be back. It's whizzed by at a rate of knots this season.
It really has. And the German football season finished with the DFB Pokal, the German Cup final. Bayern beating Dortmund. How did they do it?
Well, it was a tight game. I think Bayern had the edge throughout. They certainly created more chances. And in the end, they won it on penalties. So a good way for Pep Guardiola to go out. Obviously, there will always be that question mark over the fact that he couldn't get them to a Champions League final. But of the six major domestic honours that were available in those three seasons, he won five of them. So it's an excellent record. He's made the extraordinary seem routine in the Bundesliga. He's made it seem like a very easy league to win when we know that it's anything but. So an emotional time for Guardiola as well, as he broke down in tears at the final whistle. And I think all of that kind of pent-up emotion was eventually released.
Yeah, it's interesting that, because he comes across as, you know, very considered. Was that a surprise, do you think, maybe? Because there is the sense, or I get the sense, that Bayern fans never quite fell in love with him. Do you think, had he shown a bit more of that before, maybe that might have helped?
Yeah, I don't think the Bayern fans were ever given the opportunity to fall in love with him, really, because he did like to keep his distance. I think there is an element that he likes to stay a bit guarded, and that he does have that sensitivity. He does get wounded when he receives criticism. He does get angry when people don't really understand what he's trying to do. You know, there was, we shouldn't forget, when he first arrived, there was a lot of criticism of the way they were playing. You know, some of the football was described as boring, and it was a real contrast to the kind of thrusting, brutal play that they had under Jupp Heynckes, when they were so clinical when they won that treble. So it took a bit of bedding in, but I think over the course of the three seasons, I think there has been an acceptance amongst the fans that they've played some great football, and I think he's improved a lot of those players.
Kevin, no trophy for Thomas Tuchel. I mean, you know, we're talking only a few weeks ago, he was still mathematically in the hunt for a treble. But nonetheless, people, would it be fair to say people weren't really expecting him to win something necessarily this season, given how it had gone in Klopp's final season?
No, they weren't. And I think there have been huge strides made. I think they have improved in certain ways. I think they're a bit more measured in possession, a bit more clinical in some ways, and a little bit more tactically flexible. However, what I would say is that ultimately, progress has to be marked in trophies, and they've had chances. You know, it was for all of the excitement of Liverpool's comeback against them in the Europa League, that was a catastrophic defeat for Dortmund. They were the favourites to win that Europa League trophy, and really, they threw it away in that quarter-final. So that was a huge blow to them. And they had chances to win this. Not too many, but right at the end, Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, who's been their, you know, one of their best players, he's been their top scorer, he had a chance that was difficult, but for a player of his quality, you'd expect him to maybe hit the target. It was an awkward volley, and he put it over the bar. Had he put that away, I think it would have been a great way for Dortmund to have signed off on the season, because yet again, we have a scenario where they're losing top players. Hummels is going to Bayern, we know that. Gundogan, we expect to go to Manchester City. And ultimately, the only way to keep top players is to convince them that you're in with a shot of winning trophies. And I think it is an opportunity missed.
Absolutely. You mentioned Hummels. He's heading to Euro, along with a lot of the players that were in that German Cup final. What do you make of the squad? It looks on paper that, and I know they, you know, they won the World Cup without a centre-forward, but maybe only really Mario Gomez is what you call an out-and-out forward in the entire squad.
Yeah, and that's the way Jogi Löw has operated. He's got no problem doing that. You know, he likes players who have that fluidity and that flexibility. But he does have Gomez in there as an option, taking up that Miro Klose role, really. And Gomez has been scoring goals. You know, he's kind of rehabilitated his reputation somewhat at Beşiktaş, and he's scored plenty of goals. What's exciting is some of the players that he has, you know, brought into that initial squad. The likes of Julian Weigl, I think he fully deserves to be in that squad. He's been terrific for Borussia Dortmund at the age of just 20. Amazing the way he's taken a grip of that midfield. Guys like Joshua Kimmich, who's done a great job for Guardiola, bearing in mind he doesn't take too many risks on young players, but Kimmich was one that really stood out to Guardiola after they brought him in. So he's learnt a lot already in his first season. So again, I think they're the favourites for me. I understand France with home advantage have got the edge in terms of the bookies, but for me, with the experience they've got of having won that World Cup, and with the quality they've got in almost every department, for me, they're still the favourites.
Kevin, let's talk about the relegation playoff, which actually is on Monday night. So it may have happened by the time many people have listened to this, but Frankfurt 1-1 against Nuremberg, and potentially a huge club on the brink of relegation in Eintracht Frankfurt.
Yeah, absolutely, Rob. I mean, Nuremberg were regular Bundesliga combatants for a while before they slipped into the second tier. They've been very strong at home this season. They score plenty of goals on their own patch. They've only lost once in front of their own fans in the second division. Frankfurt really should have been further in front. They should have had a lead to take to Bavaria. They've made plenty of chances, didn't put them away. And I imagine Niko Kovac will use the same tactics as he has ever since he arrived, which is safety first, and we'll try and nick something. So it is intriguingly poised. It's usually the Bundesliga team that comes out on top in these, but I think it's going to be tense.
I saw an amazing video of the Eintracht Frankfurt fans bouncing in that first
game. Oh, yeah, it was great. Actually,
the ground was shaking. I mean, almost terrifying. You thought, hang on, should it be shaking this much? I mean, I know, Feyenoord Stadium famously does, but it was terrifying.
If they do go down, and they may well have gone down, as you say, by the time people listen to this, it will not be down to the fans, because they are one of the most vociferous, vocal fan bases you could find. Sometimes that spills over a bit. There have been incidents of that, but they are really, you know, really... you would think that they'd be more intimidating than they are. You know, I'm surprised to an extent this season that more teams haven't found it difficult to go to the Commerzbank Arena and get results, because with that kind of backing, you'd expect it to inspire the players a bit more. So that's not the fault of the fans, that's the fault of the players, really. It's been a really uninspiring season from Frankfurt. I don't think they've been particularly well led at the sporting director level, and a succession of coaches haven't really been able to do it. So if they do survive, it's a real sigh of relief for them, and they've got to take that opportunity and make the most of it.
And just finally, Kev, me and Rob are going to reveal our team of the seasons, but in terms of the Bundesliga, who's your man of the season?
I have to say Henrik Mkhitaryan, because if you're looking at certainly a player who's improved. I mean, the first half of last season, he was hopeless, listless, not interested, not contributing at all. He was revelatory in the first half of this campaign. He's made goals, he's scored goals. All of the top players like Aubameyang and Royce have sparked off him. And he's been central to what they've done under Thomas Tuchel this season. And if they do lose him this summer, that will be a gigantic blow.
Kevin, thank you so much for coming on throughout the course of the season, as well as we know, I like to pay you in chocolate milkshakes for coming on the show, so there'll be one in the post.
Excellent, I shall enjoy that very much once I've picked it up from the floor. Very nice.
Kevin, thank you, mate.
Cheers, guys.
Follow the Football in Europe account on Audioboom for the latest podcasts, interviews and special features.
Couple of other cup final results to tell you about. In Italy, Juventus beat AC Milan 1-0. It means that Milan will not be in Europe next season. Alvaro Morata with the only goal of the game in extra time. And it means that Juve have a domestic double again.
And Sassuolo will be in the Europa League.
Yes, because then Milan, because the place that Juve get from winning the cup final goes to Sassuolo. Where do they finish, sixth or seventh in the end in the table?
Tiny club. I think the first time they'll be in the Europa League. There's a few nice stories brewing up in the Europa League for next season for some very small teams, including Sassuolo.
Yeah, absolutely. And in the French Cup final, Paris Saint-Germain secured their domestic treble by beating Marseille by 4-2. It was Ibrahimovic's final game, Chris.
It was. You knew he was going to score, and he did. having got a couple on his last league appearance at the Parc des Princes, to sign off against Marseille in the biggest game in French football in the cup finals, it is a pretty good way to go. And I wonder where he is coming to.
Well, let's do this then. Is it Manchester United, do you think? It works, does it?
I think it works. I think it absolutely works. Let's just say I think there's a much better chance now Jose Mourinho is going to be the coach, maybe, than had he not been there. They've worked together. They seem to get on. I think he'd be a great addition to the Premier League, I think, for United. Can you imagine you're Martial or Rashford? You know, you're still learning your trade and you have a a born winner to go there and to help to score goals in the short term and to maybe aid your career and give you little bits of advice.
Yeah, very interesting to see where Ibrahimovic ends up in the end. There was actually a TV interview with him after the game, and they said to him, you know, it was on Canal Plus, I think, or something, and the journalist is saying, in English, saying to him, come on, Zlatan, you've been here 4 years, you've never said anything in French. Can you just give us one word? And he refused to do any French.
Did he?
Yeah, he did. He just wouldn't do it. He go, I came a king, left a legend, all that stuff, and walked off, which got a big laugh. So Zlatan Ibrahimovic, where will he head to next? We'll wait and see. Chris, I think it's time for our team of the season.
It is.
Okay, so loads of people have tweeted in with their suggestions for the best players from all the respective leagues. Thank you so much. We'll get through as many of these as we can. Jonathan Stephen has gone for Gordian from La Liga, Chiellini, Buffon and Bonucci, the back three, the main back three for Juve from Serie A, Javier Hernandez from the Bundesliga. And he says, Liga, it can't be a PSG player. I'm sick of them, especially you know who we've just been talking about. Kenny McFarlane. Says, excellent podcast. Thanks for covering some of the less high-profile leagues like Russia. And he enjoys all the guests we've had on this season. Stuart Overton says, from La Liga, Luis Suarez has to be player of the year. Higuain or Bonucci from Serie A. Ben Arfa and Ibra from Liga. And Lewandowski in the Bundesliga. Okay, we'll read out some more of those in a moment. Chris, let's start your team of the year. How's it go? Goalkeeper?
Goalkeeper.
I mean, let's start by saying this is ridiculous because you're picking players from every league. You know, we watch the Bundesliga more than any other league, maybe, apart from Russia and the Premier League.
Yeah, oh, yeah, that's
so
fair.
There's going to be a bit of a bias maybe towards Bundesliga players. It's just a bit of fun in our 11s.
It was genuinely fun doing it.
It's tough.
I always enjoy at this stage of the season, you look back to some of the things that happened that you were talking about in November and you know, you kind of forget what was going on. Then you're like, oh yeah, remember that story? Remember how well he was playing or how badly he was playing then? And yeah, come the sunshine and spring, it all changes. But in goal, I have gone for a man whose season is not yet over domestically. No, sorry, club level. Jan Oblak.
Oh, very interesting. Mm. Okay, yeah, he has been outstanding for Atletico. Is it because of his form in the Champions League? I mean, he has been really good this season.
He's been outstanding. I think also. Equaled a Spanish Liga record, 18 goals conceded all season. I mean, it's an extraordinary defence, Atletico. He doesn't always have the most to do, but what he does, he gives that back for, you know, the back 11 sometimes, the way Simeone's teams play. The assurance, and he comes up with big saves at big moments. So Oblak, for me, was my number one.
Okay, mine's... I was thinking of going for Keylor Navas for what he's done in the Champions League Real Madrid this season, and given the David De Gea situation, you know, psychologically how well he's done to adjust and stayed on as Real Madrid number one. But I've gone with Buffon. Some of the stuff he's done this season, some of the saves he's producing, it is like... I mean, I'm not the biggest Serie A expert. I haven't watched it season in, season out for his whole career. But I actually can't remember him playing so well as he has this season. And he's, you know, he's that leader at the back. I just think he's been outrageously good and part of a Juve team that really got this season back on track after a wonky start. I'll give you my back four, Chris, if you're happy. Philipp Lahm, Diego Godin on the subject of Atletico with that mean defence. Chiellini, I've gone for, but many people saying Bonucci. Maybe I should have gone Bonucci. And Oscar Wendt of Borussia Mönchengladbach, who... I certainly think was the best left-back in Germany this season. David Alaba was playing in a lot of different positions. And Wendt going forward has been absolutely brilliant. He was Gladbach's player of the season. At the halfway point, they gave him, you know, a halfway of the season player of the year award. And he's very good getting forward. He's very quick. He works very hard. He's very sincere in the way he plays. And that's why he's in my team. And I suspect you have Godin as well, Chris.
I do have Godin. I have Philipp Lahm at right-back as well, actually. Mm. Honourable mention to Manuel Fernandez for Cisca. I think he, every week when I watch him, I must have done maybe 10-15 of their games this season. He consistently is one of those 8 out of 10 players. Mm-hmm. But Lahm, I think, has been great. Thiago Silva was my other centre back alongside Godin. Again, they conceded 19 goals all season. I wonder whether Jerome Boateng, had he been fit, might have been in my team. Yeah. And I think had he been fit, Bayern might be in the Champions League final. Kimmich came in and Alaba did good jobs, but they missed Boateng. And Felipe Luis is my left back.
Oh yeah, that was the other one I wasn't sure about.
You say never.
He was so great against Bayern over the two.
And he was so good against Barca. Remember on that penalty when he dribbled from one end of the pitch to the other. They say never go back, but he, after that weird 12 months at Chelsea, has gone back and he's been brilliant. So yeah, my back four is Lahm, Godin, Thiago Silva and Felipe Luis.
Okay, so are you going 4-3-3?
4-3-3.
You're very attacking.
Very attacking.
Yeah, same. So yes. Who are your best three midfielders?
Well, I say I'm attacking. I've sort of got two holding midfielders in a way.
Good.
So I've got Koke.
Yeah.
He's just brilliant.
I've got Koke as well.
He epitomises Atleti,
I think. Creativity.
Yeah, exactly.
Passing, everything.
Quite. Not just this, you know, I think it's, oh, they're hardworking and have got great shape. They've also got great players and he is one of them. This is a bit controversial, but because how well he's come into the team in the second half of the season and how well that team has done, Casemiro.
Okay, yeah, okay.
I mean, Real Madrid are in the Champions League final, which didn't seem likely for a lot of the campaign, but they are. And I think Zidane didn't seem to rate him maybe at first, but very quickly he got in the team. He gives him that balance, and I think they've been significantly better since he started playing for Real Madrid.
And you must have one more midfielder.
Yeah, right. Douglas Costa.
Okay, yeah. I have not picked him, even though he was so good, particularly in the first half of the season.
Yeah, maybe his performances weren't quite as high at the end of the campaign, but genuinely, he thrills me every time I watch him. He's the sort of player that I would like to see my team have.
It's the cliche that you get off your seat when he has the ball because, you know,
something's going to happen.
I love how he can do that. You know where Ronaldo hits the valve of the ball and makes it swerve, the knuckleball shot. And he can do that from open play and he can do it with a cross. I mean, he's just so quick, skillful, absolutely brilliant. Good signing, Pep Guardiola.
Yes, indeed.
Pretty good.
And another who... It's interesting this because you often think, oh, okay, they're at Shakhtar, they're doing well. What about when they go to a big club? But consistently, they do very well. And I, you know, we talked about Teixeira earlier this season, but you know, you've got the likes of Willian, Mkhitaryan, and Douglas Costa who have come from Shakhtar and become really, arguably, some of their team's most important players.
You just reminded me that Maciej Luchescu's left Shakhtar. And that Dinamo Moscow were relegated in Russia. Absolutely unbelievable.
Did you hear what Lev Yashin's widow said?
No.
He said it's probably good that he's not here to have witnessed it.
Dear Lord. Forwards. Oh, no, I've not done my midfield.
Yeah, who's
yours? Koke, I've got Koke.
Are you 3-3?
Yeah, it's stupid, my team. I've got Ben Arfa in midfield, even though he's been playing as a sort of forward this season. 17 Ligue 1 goals. He's not in the 23 for France. You talk about players getting you off your seat. I think more than Douglas Costa, I know he's playing in France, but every time Ben Arfa's got the ball, whenever I've seen him, something amazing is happening. He's dribbling past players. His notable goal against Saint-Étienne this season was one of the moments of the season. And for a turnaround for a guy who, you know, was clearly... quite a troubled guy, I think it would be fair to say. He would get in fights with managers every single club. And then he had that 6 months where he couldn't play because he technically played for two clubs in the same season. And he went back home. He hung out with his friends from home, played futsal and five-a-side and stuff like this, and came back and he said for the first time he had inner peace and that he felt he could do what he loved again. And he's just been unreal. And he says 18 clubs want to sign him because he's available on a free. So we'll wait and see. So I've got Koke, Ben Arfa and Mkhitaryan, who Kev's already touched on, so I don't really need to add anything to that piece, but outstanding. Strikers. Have we got the same three, do you think?
Well, I was going to have an honourable mention for Ben Arfa. He didn't make my three as a forward.
Douglas Costa was going to be my honourable mention. So there we go.
Isn't that funny?
Yes.
Okay, I think there's two for me that had to be in it. Luis Suarez and Gonzalo Higuain.
Yes, I've got those. Higuain, 36 league goals this season. Broke the Serie A goalscoring record.
Next best was 19. I mean, that's mad.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. And Luis Suarez has scored 53 goals this season in all competitions. You know, it's tough to pick who is the best striker in the world, but Might be one of those two guys. Might be Luis Suarez.
Yeah, in terms of a finisher, yeah. I mean, he's a lot more than that, Luis Suarez, but he is. He's outstanding. And remember, you know, Messi was out for quite a lot of this season. Barcelona ended up winning the double, and Neymar was great, but Suarez was also fantastic.
Yeah, when Messi wasn't there. Might win the Ballon d'Or. Could he do that?
It's
a Euro year, isn't it?
It depends what happens in the Copa America.
Yeah.
But they've not
won the Champions League.
It's a Euro year. Any other season, yeah, I think it will. But then you don't know because, well, I'm going to say someone who could potentially win it. He'd have to have a very good month or so. But if he did, if Antoine Griezmann,
yeah,
I don't think he's going to win the Ballon d'Or. That was fanciful. But absolutely, he's my third striker. I think for all of Atleti's defensive discipline, he has scored some fantastic goals. He got two against Barcelona in the quarterfinal. He scored against Bayern in the semi-final. We're recording this in Champions League final week. He could, you know, I sort of hope Atleti do win it, actually, because I think this is their time to do so. And I think Griezmann's been outstanding.
His goal at Bayern was absolutely wonderful. And he has really bought into what Simeone's doing there in terms of work rate. I've gone for Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang ahead of Lewandowski from Germany. Or ahead of Ibrahimovic. This is a non-Premier League team, by the way, that people have probably worked that out. So I'd certainly have Kante in there. But Aubameyang, 36 league goals, 36 goals in all competitions this season. And, you know, a former winger, a former wide-playing forward who's turned into a proper centre-forward following Lewandowski leaving, you know, for Bayern when he did. And over the past years, and particularly this season, he's evolved into a real natural striker. So quick, strong, composed in front of goal. It's a shame they haven't won anything because, you know, they'd be in there at the top three teams to watch this season, maybe. But Aubameyang, unbelievable. So your team, Chris, let's have your team in full.
My team in full. And also, I've got a coach. Have you thought of a coach?
No.
Should have planned this off air.
Go on then, who is it?
My coach is Max Allegri.
Oh, okay.
Because they ended up winning the double. They had that terrible start to the season. He lost players like Pirlo, Tevez, Vidal. And almost in the same way Sir Alex Ferguson did when he was at United, when he just built another winning team. Now, it's far too early to say that, you know, Allegri is Sir Alex Ferguson. But, you know, losing all those players, having that bad start, things could have unravelled pretty quickly at Juventus. And he turned the season around.
He did.
They barely didn't win a game since about the autumn, and they've ended up winning the league by 9 points ahead of a very good Napoli team and winning the double. And I think Allegri's again an amazing job, and I saw that he talked about the cup final this weekend, beating Milan. Allegri, they haven't won a trophy Milan since Allegri, who was then fired, and I wonder whether Silvio Berlusconi looks at that
Absolutely.
Now and thinks maybe I made the wrong decision.
Yes, very much so. Some more of yours. Gav's gone with Higuain and Donnarumma from Serie A, the 16-year-old goalkeeper. Might be 17 now, I'm not sure. La Liga, Luis Suarez, Bundesliga, Aubameyang, Liga, Ibra. Stephen Doyne says, you can't look past Dybala in Serie A. La Liga, definitely Suarez. Bundesliga, tougher. Aubameyang's had a great season. As well, how about this one? Julian Nagelsmann given a mention, Bundesliga coach of the year, player of the year, Lewandowski, Mkhitaryan. And who else? Conor Brown here. Higuain from Italy. Bundesliga was tough, but he's gone for Mkhitaryan. And finally, Ben Arfa, and considering his history and stats. So thanks to everyone who's downloaded the show this season. We really hope you've enjoyed it. And we've got some exciting news because for the summer, it looks like we're going to be doing a podcast very similar to this one as the official Euro 2016 podcast.
Yes.
It's good news, Chris, though.
It's great news. I'm really, really excited about Euro. It's been there in the background while the you know, domestic competitions, but now it's like, yeah, it's going to be great. And I generally think, and maybe I'm like this every 2 years, when England qualify at least, I think we've got a really exciting team.
So we will tweet out information about that,
yes,
that podcast that we're going to be doing for Euro 2016. But if you'd like this one, you'll probably like that one.
It won't just be me and you speaking in the kitchen.
No, it won't, exactly. So thank you very much to everyone who's enjoyed the show this season. Stay subscribed and we'll have news on plans for next season as well. Chris, any final words?
I should probably go through my team again.
Oh, yeah, go on, give your team of the year this to finish off.
And this might be the stage when I realise I've picked 10 players
go
or something
on.
Like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, Paul, put Daniel Sturridge in or not.
In goal, Oblak, right back, Lahm, Godin, Thiago Silva, centre-backs, Felipe Luis, left-back, midfield three, Koke, Casemiro and Douglas Costa, up front, Suarez, Higuain and Griezmann.
Mine, Buffon, Lahm, Godin, Chiellini, Vent, Mkhitaryan, Koke, Ben Arfa, Aubameyang, Higuain, Luis Suarez. Thank you very much to everyone for downloading the show. We're not back on Monday, but stay tuned for our Euro 2016 show.
This is Football in Europe.